Okay. I'd like to start with a few opening words that I should say probably at the beginning of every shiur we have here on Wednesday nights, and that is what we're trying to accomplish here. What we try to accomplish, it's limud Torah. We like to learn Torah. We like to expand our minds and consider issues from different angles. And of course, the idea is to appreciate more of what happened in the Holocaust, not just the physical oppression, but the moral, the psychological issues that they had to deal with, which here we are with the benefit of 75 years later, are no easier. I start off at the top of the sheet talking about the most well-known of the Jewish children that were given over to non-Jewish families. Of course, many Jewish families had the very difficult decision to make as to what to do with the children. Of course, the children were most vulnerable. That when the Nazis came, there was no value of the children. They couldn't work, etc. They would exterminate them right away. And therefore, the danger was greatest to them. And therefore, the parents had to think of what they could possibly do to save their children. And a real possibility was to give the children over one way or another to a non-Jewish family, to an orphanage, to a convent, etc., to watch the children until hopefully after the war, they'll be able to come and get them back. Obviously, it's not without risk, this, in terms of the physical risk. The physical risk of giving the children over was undoubtedly less than the physical risk of not giving them over. That's for sure. However, the spiritual risk was very real. The best known case was the case of Aaron Lustiger. Aaron Lustiger, there is a movie about it. You can watch it, The Jewish Cardinal. I just give you a little bit on top here from the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, which when Lustiger died in 2007, they had a little hespit for him, and they wrote, United States Holocaust Memorial mourns the passing of Cardinal Jean-Marie Lustiger, Archbishop Emeritus of Paris, born Aaron Lustiger in Paris to a Polish Jewish family who had settled in France before the First World War. He was sent to live with a Christian family in Orleans after the Germans occupied France in 1940. He converted to Catholicism in 1940 at the age of 13. His parents were deported. His mother was murdered in Auschwitz.
When they say his parents,
his biological parents. Correct.
The Lustigers, Mr. and Mrs.
But his father survived.
His father tried very hard to get him out afterwards. He, in fact, asked the chief rabbi of Paris to intercede on his behalf, and he was unsuccessful. And therefore, his son was raised as a Catholic and, in fact, did quite well. Not exactly Yiddish Anachis, but he was very close to potentially...
He came close to becoming the Pope.
Right? Among the jokes they used to tell in Paris is, what's the difference between the archbishop and the chief rabbi? The difference is that the archbishop speaks Yiddish.
In fact, was it a time when the chief rabbi was farty?
Correct. So that was, and again, there's an entire movie about him, in fact, the Jewish Cardinal, which I don't think Shlomo is showing on Sunday morning.
Cardinal but, Knowledge.
What?
Cardinal Knowledge.
I don't think that's the one, but... so, in fact, this is just one case of a Jewish family who gave over their child in order to be physically saved, and unfortunately, it did not turn out the way they wanted it to. In fact, there's much written about this. A very small percentage, I'd say, of the cases turned out well, meaning that the parents survived the war, came back, were given the children, and the children went running into their arms. Just take a look at we're back on the Holocaust Memorial website. In hundreds of cases, rescuers refused to release hidden children to their families or Jewish organizations. Right? This is the case that Leigh, I'm sure, was talking about, that in fact, many of them said, too bad, I raised him, he's my kid now, I'm not giving him back. Some demanded that the child be redeemed through financial remuneration. Others had grown attached to their charges and did not want to give them up. In the more difficult cases, courts had to decide to whom to award custody of the child. Some rescuers defied court decisions and hid the children for a second time. The future of thousands of orphan children became a pressing matter. In the Netherlands, more than half of the 4,000 to 6,000 surviving Jewish children were declared war foster children. I'm not going to try the next word. And most were placed under a state committee's guardianship. The vast majority were returned to their surviving Jewish family, members of a Jewish organization. More than 300 were given to non-Jewish families. Parents, relatives, representatives of Jewish organizations who came to reclaim the children often encountered ambivalence, antagonism, sometimes resistance. After years of concealing their true identity, Jewishness for some of the hidden Jewish children had become to symbolize persecution, while Christianity stood for security. Some children even repeated anti-Semitic phrases learned from their classmates and adults. Can you believe that? The parents come to pick up the kid, and the kid tells the father he's a dirty Jew. Those who were too young to remember their parents knew only their adopted family religion and orphan nationality. Many truly loved their foster families and refused to be given into the arms of a stranger. In a few instances, some youngsters had to be physically taken from their foster families. For a number of hidden children, the war's end did not bring an end to the traumatic experiences. What I'd like to discuss is if someone has had the issue of whether they should give a child over to a Christian family, give them over to a Christian orphanage, give them over to a convent or the like, should they decide to do that, or should they better not risk the religious repercussions and keep the children with them? Obviously, in the event that the parents did not go for the option of giving over the children, their odds of survival were minimal. We know, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, we're all familiar with this Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Yehotzadek, Nimnu v'gamru ba'aliyos beis natza b'lud, kol aveh shebetara im omrim la'odam over v'al teharag yavol v'al yaharag. They decided that any mitzvah in the Torah, if they are given the option of violating the mitzvah or being killed, you should violate the mitzvah. Chutz me'avodah zarah v'gilah rayis v'shvichos damim. With the exception of the three what we call cardinal sins, one of them being idolatry, the other one being murder, and the third one being sexual immorality. Now, it would seem that giving a child over to Christianity would fall under the category of
avodah zarah.
On the other hand, who's giving over their life? Is it the parent or the child? It is the child's life that would be. That's exactly what we're going to talk about. So the question is, in the event that I would have a choice, God forbid, of converting or losing my life, that's one thing. But this child is under the age of bar mitzvah, it's under the age of a bas mitzvah, it's babes in arms. Does the halacha apply to them? Are they obligated not to be oved avodah zarah? So there's a very interesting Rambam. The Rambam uses some very strange language in the beginning. Kol Beis Yisrael Mitzuvim Al Kiddush Hashem HaGadol. Kol Beis, the entire house of Israel, is obligated to do Kiddush Hashem. Shenemar V'Nikdashti B'Soch B'nei Yisrael. Mitzvim Shecho Lechal Lo Shem Wosel Chal Lo Shem Kodshi. Kol Beis Yisrael. Very odd words. What's Kol Beis Yisrael?
Everybody.
Right.
Jewish.
But does the Rambam generally use the words Kol Beis Yisrael?
No.
Right? Where does that come from? So those are the words that we're going to have to focus on. So he says, what does it mean? You have to make a Kiddush Hashem, you can't make a Chilul Hashem? It says, Ketzad, Kishiyamod Ove Kochovim V'yana says Yisrael Avor Arachas B'kol Mitzvos Amuris B'Torah. If a non-Jew puts a gun to your head and says you got to be over in Aveira, O Yargenu, Yavor V'lo Yeharek, Shnebo B'mitzvos, So this is what he's saying, that in general you give your life. The next halacha says, however, for the big three, you give up your life rather than do that. What did the Rambam mean by telling us Kol Beis Yisrael? It's so out of the Rambam's character to use those words. So if you look at some of the commentaries, I'll give you one of the Avodas HaMelech. He says, what's Kol Beis Yisrael Mitzuvim Al Kiddush Hashem HaGadol? He says, Beis Yisrael, lafukei nachrim. These rules does not apply to a non-Jew. If a non-Jew is so non-Jew is obligated in the three cardinal sins as well. A non-Jew can't be over Avodah Zarah, can't be over Gilui Arayos, can't kill somebody. What if someone puts a gun to a non-Jew's head and says, you know, bow down to Buddha? So again, that's an avera. Does the non-Jew have to give up their life for it? Right? And what do we think a Jew should do?
That's
I just wanted to totally discredit you, so okay. That we don't have to consider that opinion at all. Okay, so but the Rambam is saying, it says base Yisrael to say this, even though non-Jews are obligated in these cardinal sins as well, they don't have to give up their life for it. But those are the word base Yisrael. What's the kol doing there? We still have an extra word. Well, it's men and women alike. Right? Right? And the rules of Kiddush Hashem even apply to young children. Even you can't say that they are obligated. How can you command a 6-month-old child to do something? We have a proof from Eicha, for the Medrash Eicha, that will show you that even a babe in arms is also obligated to give their life for Kiddush Hashem. What is the case in Eicha Rabbah? We give it to you in number 4. This story is actually a story that we might be more familiar with from Gittin, but it's slightly different. There's a story of a woman and her 7 sons. And they are told to be Oved Avodah Zarah, and one by one they announce that they would rather give up their lives. So, while the story is told generally in the Gemara, it's told in the Medrash more specifically. We give you part of it. Mais b'Miriam bas Nachtom. We actually have the woman's name here. She nishbisi v'shiva banel. That she was taken into captive with her 7 sons. Notlan kesav notlan legiov min hashiva kankalim hevias arish omelo hishtachu v'tzelem. Omelo chas v'sholom hishtachu v'tzelem. So the first, so Caesar went and brought them out, and one at a time said, bow down to the idol. And one by one they said, we're not going to do it. They went through all of them, and so finally we're down to the last child. So they were talking about this, with the last one, he decided to talk a little theology. He said, if your God is so great, how come he's not saving you? Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, and Nebuchadnezzar threw them into the fiery furnace. God saved them. How come he's not saving you with this God? So the kid responds, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Ksherim, are you? They were tzaddikim. But Nebuchadnezzar, Melech, Hagun, he. And Nebuchadnezzar was the type of guy who deserved to see a miracle. Avo ata ein chahagun. You don't deserve nothing, Caesar. V'anu nischayvim misa l'shamayim. And clearly we deserve to be put to death for whatever reason. V'mei natahar genu harbe hargim yesh l'makom. If you don't kill us, someone else will kill us. Harbe duvim, harbe ze'evim, v'arayas nechoshim, nemorim, akravim. There are plenty of bears that could get us, plenty of wolves, lions, snakes, scorpions, you name it, they got it. Leopards, sheifku banu v'yargenu, ela l'sof hakash bachu osu mimcha es damenu. But ultimately, you're going to pay for what you did to us. Miyad gazel ahargo. Caesar says, that's it, kill this kid. Amaro ima b'chaye roshi kesas nes b'niya chabkei v'anashkeyu. So the mother says, come on, let me at least give my son a final hug and a kiss. Nasnu ro v'tzira dadeh v'nicha cholav. She went and she nursed the child. She said, do me a favor, kill me first. Then you can kill me. I shouldn't have to watch this. Sorry. Now, the focus of this story is the fact is, how old is this kid?
He was still nursing.
The kid was still nursing.
And he's making a very big argument here.
A very impressive argument. But if the kid is still nursing, the kid is obviously very young. And still the kid is chayiv in Kiddush Hashem. So that's what they say the source perhaps for the Rambam is. The fact is that you see that when it comes to Kiddush Hashem, it's kol Beis Yisrael. Even children, even babies have to give up their lives rather than be Oved Avodah Zarah.
This is basically the same story as Hannah and her seven sons.
That is correct. This is an earlier version of it. And again, there's a Gemara in Gittin that has it as well, if you want to look it up. You can actually do it on Tisha B'Av. It's one of the allowed Gemaras. Which again, does not, the reason we go with this source and not the other one is because this has her nursing him at the end, which gives you a clear indication of the age, which is important to us. Similarly, another, this is Gemara in Gittin as well, right next to this one, it says as follows, Maisa b'dal me'al shiladim v'yodol shenishbu l'kalom. There were 400 young men and women that were taken captive and were being taken to Rome. They knew what was going to go on here. They were being brought there for what? For immoral purposes. They said, tell us, if we jump off the boat and kill ourselves now, will we get Olam Haba? He has a drasha. He said, "The people who drown, they will go to Olam Haba." Mm-hmm. All the girls jumped off and killed themselves. The boys had a kavachomer. What they're going to do to them is at least natural. Kach, they killed themselves. Anu she ain't darken b'kach. What they're going to do to us is not natural. Al achas chama v'kama. Avheim kavtzu l'tol chayam. They also jumped off. V'leim akosav amin kirecha ragnu kol hayam nachshavnu l'tzukat zon tivcha. So again, you see all these children giving up their lives. So again, there's no proof that everybody was not above the age of bar mitzvah. Doesn't sound, again, if they were above the age of bar mitzvah, why would you refer them as yaladim v'yaladot? You can argue against it. But again, you seem to see this idea that there is a concept that Kiddush Hashem, giving up one's life to avoid Avodah Zarah, that even applies to children under the age of Bar Mitzvah. One more source that seems that to point that way is a Gemara in Chulin. Comments as follows. Rav Nosson Omer, Rav Nosson tells the following story. Pam achas halachi karche ayam. I was traveling one time. Basa isha achas lefana, and a woman came to me. Shemala benarisha umeis. Sheni umeis. She had a first child, performed a bris milah, and the child died from it. A second one had a bris milah, again it died. Shlishi avilafanai. Now that she had a third child, and she brought it to me, and said, what do I do? Ve'isiv shaya adam. I saw he was red. Martila biti. Hamtini roachi yivra adam. Give him a little time till the blood gets absorbed into the body, and then you can do it. Hamtina ro mara v'chaya. She waited, she gave the bris, and the kid survived. And she named her son Nosan Habavli because she named him after me. That's the story in the Gemara. Rashi makes an interesting comment. Hamtinolo, I said, wait. Wait, because there's no mitzvah that you're going to risk your life for, with the exception of the big three. What's the implication of Rashi? If this was a matter of the big three, would she be able to wait? No. Now, whose life was on the line?
The kids.
Right? So Rashi seems to be indicating, like we said earlier, that Kiddush Hashem applies not just to adults, but even to children. Now, the obvious question is why? Yossi raised the issue where he said, I don't understand. Kiddush Hashem, fine, but the kid, this is below the bar mitzvah. We're talking about babies here. 1 year old, 2 years old. How old were these kids when they were given over, some of them? So he turned around and said, well, how could it be that they're chayv to give up their life if they're not chayv in the mitzvah itself? So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky in his Perush on Chumash says as follows. He quotes the Rambam. Says, Ayin b'Rambam. Says, Kol b'Yisrael m'sum al-Kiddush Hashem. The Mashko Kol Beis Yisrael. Why does it say Kol Beis Yisrael? That very strange language. Kivin L'Rabos HaKtanim. That's in fact is supposed to include the kids as well. Kedeksev says, Yerecha, Yerecha is basically Yisrael, HaKatanim Im HaGadolim. But why? So he makes the fine comment. He said, the Pasuk that obligates us to do Kiddush Hashem is worded in a very strange way. You would expect it to be an obligation, a command. You should say, she said, Takdishu Eshmi. You should be Mekadish. You should sanctify my name. That would be talking to you. I want you to do it. What does it say? Nikdashti. I should be sanctified B'soch B'nei Yisrael from amongst the B'nei Yisrael. So he said, "Kivayachol Hakadosh Baruch Hu anifal." In Kain Gam, I diktanim Eshes Yase Inyan Zeh. It's not a matter that God is asking us to do something, but He wants His name to be sanctified, and that is done. It's interesting. Who's the object? Who's the subject here?
We're the subject. Right? He's the object.
Right. So there. So again. So therefore, it's done to Him. Unlike usually, it says God says, "You do this. You do that." But this isn't. It's a very different. V'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael. So that's an obligation. It's an obligation of the entire b'nei Yisrael. So he said v'niro zeh. So he says, if I said that's the story. That's why even kids, because it's not about the person doing it, it's about God who it's being done to. Gami de'ektanim eshesh yase inyan zeh. Ramati zecher l'davar pashuk hevi a Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos. The idea is that it's very different, and therefore even children are obligated. Then he goes on and says, people who gave up their lives and the lives of their children throughout history, it's based on this. Why? In order to avoid conversion, I understand that the adults have to give up their lives. But what gave them the right to also sacrifice the children? Who allowed them to do this? The answer is that if the kids would have converted, right, that would have been a terrible desecration of the name of God. And therefore, that is why. Very interesting. The Das Zakenim is a collection of Tosfos on the Chumash. And in Parshas Noach, he has a story. Let's consider the story. There was a rabbi who was killing many children at a time of shmad, of assimilations, in order to stop them from being converted. There was a second rabbi. He says, what are you doing? Why are you killing these children? Are you crazy? He says, you're a murderer. And the guy wasn't, the first rabbi wouldn't stop. He said, if I am right, you should die a terrible death. And that's what happens. He was grabbed by the non-Jews. They went and they skinned him and they put sand between his skin and his muscles. Then it ended up that the original gezera was undone, and the kids never would have had a problem. So in fact, he killed all these people for no reason. What does that prove, this story? Does this prove that children have to be sacrificed for the sake? Is it? It's the wrong thing to do.
You don't know the outcome.
Right. So he's saying
it depends on whether or not you can guess the outcome. Then perhaps what you have to do is you have to be very sure of what you're doing when you're doing it. In this case,
so the mean catcher, the dark achieva, deals with this. He says, "Chayv l'arug lo yavo." Nirsham bezichruni. He says, I have in my memory. I saw a tshuva from some Svardi one time. I forgot the name of the book. I forgot the name of the author. And he discussed, I'm pretty sure who it is, by the Chikrei Lev, he has a long piece about whether or not a child is chayv in Yehorek Ve'al Yavor. He thought, in fact, that the kids were chayev. He said, but what about this story where he said that people who are killing the kids is a rotzeach? It's only because it was a suffix that we weren't sure it was going to turn out. In fact, it turned out the opposite way. So he said the bottom line is that he thinks that at the end of the day, again, even children are chayiv in Yehorek Ve'al Yavor. One more source before we get to the actual cases. The Shiuri Bracha, which is the Chida. Haru Hamorim Be'esek Bish. There was once a terrible case. Be'ish Ech Bish Asher B'Shem Yisrael Yechuna Mecha Yeradav HaKtanim L'Goyim. A Jew sold his children to non-Jews. Stam and Oisvarf. What?
When?
Last Tuesday. So, right? Vahasar shomei roshayam losei siladim. So the guy went to court and he demanded delivery of the product. So the head of the community went to the Jews and said, deliver. So they went to the rabbis. Are we allowed to? Pasku shalo yimserem ela hagoyim ba'atzam yochel yechapsu achreim. He says, we don't give over kids. They want, they can go try to find them. But we don't give them over. With that in mind, we turn to Rav Ashri. Rav Ashri in the Shut Mimamakim tells the following stories. Chadoshim achodim with Neshar Germanim, Yimach Shemam, Vizichram, Hotzio Rifolas, Herek Hayiladim, Yehudim, Hayidua, B'Shem, Kinder Action. Begetto Kovna B'Yom Gimel V'Dalid Nissen Tovshin Dalid. 1944, they come to the Kovna ghetto and they said, okay, we want the children. Kvar Nefutza Hashmua Harotova Begetto Alpulas Azava Azusha Hazedim Harum Omdim Lahavia Bepulas Retzach Hamonizer Shinirtzchu Oz Ke'elefum Asayim Yelad. And when they went, they, at the time, they killed 1,200 children just in Kovna. Kids, the parents were panicked. What could we possibly do to save our children? One possibility was to buy non-Jewish birth certificates with non-Jewish names. Take the birth certificate, wrap it up with a baby in a basket. And leave it in front of an orphanage, or leave it in front of a church. That way they'll take in the baby and they'll raise the child. Or the people who gave it over to priests like this. Let them be raised by the priests in order that they should be physically saved. That they should, if they survive the war, they'll go back and they'll get the kids back. Another possibility is if you have a non-Jewish neighbor, you give them the child to raise. Unfortunately, the odds are the parents aren't going to make it. And if parents don't make it, the kids are never getting out. So the question is, what is the right thing to do? Now, again, as I was saying in the beginning, whatever we come up in the end, we're not judging anybody. Well, how would you split them? I don't understand. Halachically, you can't do it. But
I'm not saying that it isn't or is it. But I'm just saying, let's say hypothetically, halachically, you could do it. Emotionally, it might not be an easy piece to do any of this.
Well, again, that's a different story. But again, the parents here are ready, willing, and able to do it, and they're just asking the question: can they do it? Again, Lustiger was under bar mitzvah at the time, just under bar mitzvah. And again, that is one case. It's the best known case. But you have to, I mean, how many cases are we talking about here, Leah? Tens of thousands? Probably.
They said 46,000 in Holland alone.
Right, okay.
That's one source you have.
Correct. Okay, so if that, and Holland isn't where the biggest numbers are.
No, and how many were in the kinder transports that went to England? 50,000?
Well, that was different. The one the kinder transports weren't given over to, they were given to Jewish parents.
I think not necessarily, no.
Again.
Not 100%.
To go back to my point, I don't think it's so what?
Simple it isn't. No one's saying that this is simple.
I think even when you're willing to give them up, there's still an emotional piece at that point.
Yeah, but there's an emotion that goes the other way where you don't want to give it up. That may be cloudy. And the point is that you are supposed to listen to the child in spite of
emotion. There's a good chance that the kids are not going to become become Christian or etc.
But Rabbi, I thought if you're born to a Jewish mother, then you're Jewish.
That's for sure.
Even if you're
no matter what.
And you become, what was Bob Dylan, and you become every religion that you can.
Yeah, but he came back.
Right.
He came back.
Well, yeah, that's the issue. Again, the issue, the problem is they're Jewish. They're Jewish, they're never going to know that they're Jewish, and therefore they're going to act like non-Jews for their entire life.
Some of them might still find out that they realize that they're
Jewish. Again, they're
I believe that there are a bunch of people in Europe who, as DNA kids become more popular, are going to be going, what? 25% Ashkenazi Jewish?
Mm-hmm. So that's the question. It goes without saying that this is an unbelievably difficult question, yet we're not trying to answer the question at this point. Thank God the question doesn't come up at this point. And we're definitely not judging anybody. So he says as follows. Chazinan mizeh, the osri gedon limser chetan le'akum, to physically hand them over to the priest. That's what we saw in number 11. You can't do that. You cannot give them to a monastery. You can't give them to a covenant. That is not. You're handing them over to do avodah zarah. Even if it means saving them physically, that's not allowed. Even though they themselves are not obligated, we saw, like we saw in that case, you can't hand them over. So he says to actually give them to a priest, that is not allowed. However, what about giving to the neighbors, to the non-Jewish neighbors? So he says, giving to the neighbors who agree to give it back, assuming the parents live. Now that's different, right? Now you have a couple, not a religious order, that are raising the child, who might very well tell them that they're Jewish after the war. Right? The odds of them not knowing they're Jewish is less in the case of giving into an individual rather than giving them over to a religious order. So he says, in that case, that's a different story. When you're dealing with a case where there is a potential, you're not sure about whether or not the life has to be given, you can be lenient here. If you don't give the child over, the kid's definitely dead. He will live. There's a possibility that the parents will live also. Right? So if the parents live, they'll hopefully get the child back. God will look out, watch after them. Even if they don't make it, they might give him over to a Jewish orphanage, right? They'll come, they'll say, listen, we held this child. The child is Jewish, and give the child back. That is a possibility. Again, we know it didn't happen in 100% of the cases, but there were righteous Gentiles who gave the child up afterwards.
I have a question. What happens, there were a few cases where monasteries or convents hid Jewish children and after the war sent them to Israel. Obviously that would contradict the earlier part of this.
Right, so that's the question. Right, so again, so in the opinion of Rav Oshri, the Truth in Makim, he thought that giving them over to a monastery, the odds were too strong that they wouldn't ever come back. However, giving them over to individuals, he thought was different. And therefore, he said to give it over to the individuals, he thought would be allowed.
So what about the case, and I forget the name of the village in France.
Yeah,
they hid them. There was an entire village in France that hid, and it was arranged by a priest.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember when the movie came out, I was living in Paris. And the fact is, interestingly enough, all the people in this village were thoroughly anti-Semitic beliefs, but they mm-hmm. saved the kids and then sent them to Israel after the war.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. No. I saw Rav Arlizer Font. It's not that.
Right.
Right. That was a different one. That was the kid who got caught. At the end. I actually saw that. So that is the opinion of Rav Oshri. Rav Gershuni wrote a piece on this as well, of Yehuda Gershuni, and he actually saw things very differently. So he says, "Achas shegiya atzora atomim medinas Poland, Litva, and Russia." When the Germans came into Poland, Lithuania, and Russia. And the kids were in terrible danger. They gave it to non-Jewish acquaintances. If we don't come back, they're yours. These kids went to church every Sunday, right? They were treated like every other child in the family, right? They went to Catholic schools.
Well, they weren't protecting them.
Correct. They didn't have an option, right? Right. Oh, my son, Moshe, can't make it right now. And to get him out afterwards was not simple. And some got fake birth certificates and gave them into orphanages. And they gave them to priests sometimes. He has a long piece on it, and he says bottom line is as follows. First, kids are putter from the mitzvahs. A. And he thinks that there is no obligation for them to do Kiddush Hashem. Right? not like the understanding of the sources that we saw earlier. If it's 100% okay, then they have to do it. However, we don't have to do something to the kids. We don't have to hurt them. He thinks, well, how will it turn out? Will they end up Jewish or not? 50-50. Safek hashokol. Bevaday muto aleinu iser ro rimsor rishmal yadenu. V'afilu shezeh safek. In general, of course you would never do this. Shemnathu l'nimsor osam bevaday yargum. He said, therefore they're definitely going to be given over. They'll be given. Arei ha-shach bereshiv k'nuzayin pasach b'shem chumas ha-dashin l'idin kiddush Hashem. Shaito ro hikpidal ibud nefashos Yisrael v'yofinu mishar svekos. So he said, the shach was the chumas ha-dashin, that even if there's a doubt about it, you have to, the kid has to die. Doesn't apply. However, he says, "Ayin bar gadol, kuntres kiddush Hashem." But there's another self harm. Shevi b'shem bal chazon nachem, the gam b'kiddush Hashem b'safek azirinam lekula. He says, "No. If there's a matter of doubt, that's reason enough that you can be lenient here, and you don't have to give up the life." Shum safek nafash horav dochei divrei hashach v'shum safek kosher chasafti. So this is a matter of machokas. In the event that there is a possibility that the child will not end up a Christian, right? Is that enough to say, okay, so you can save their life this way or not? According to Rav Ashri, he thinks it's a split. You got to play the odds. Putting it in a convent or on a monastery, the odds are too bad. I'm sorry, you can't do that. But another family, he thinks, yes. If you look at Rav Gershuni seems to say that perhaps in all cases, even giving it over, you could give it over because there is a possibility, as the movie which we haven't found yet, the book, right? Okay, I thought you were Googling it, right? In those cases, he thinks that perhaps there is reason to be makel. But as we said, very difficult cases. Yes.
Even inadvertently, like when you eat poison by mistake, you still die.
Right. So there, it's interesting. There's a famous comment which says a nebuch apikaris is oichen apikaris, as it is. If someone is an apikaris, because they don't know better, that they still are. Not everybody agrees with the Rambam there. Not everybody agrees. Again, if a person. Think of this kid, right? The kid at the age of 6 months is given over, and this is how he's raised. And the kid doesn't know better, but he's a very moral, ethical person, etc. The guy's going to get up and they say, sorry, you're actually Jewish, you're not getting into Olam Haba. If you were a guy, you'd be set. If you knew you were Jewish, but sorry. So going to the Rambam, the answer is yes. But not everybody agrees with that. But obviously, no one's arguing that them converting is a very, very bad thing. And everybody agrees, if it's definitely going to happen, then in fact, it's better that they should lose their life.
So in the case of the first example, lasted being 13,
again, I'd rather not get into the Lustiger. There's a movie about it. Lustiger may be a very special case, because Lustiger might have had interest beforehand. At least that's definitely the way.
Interest in being...
not Jewish, yes. They had interest, perhaps, in the New Testament beforehand. Lustiger's family was not an Orthodox family, you know, but at the end of the day, right, I haven't watched the movie, but I've read up about it, and Lustiger never denied his Jewishness. He considered himself Jewish, and at his Levaya, they said Kaddish. They interestingly, the first few, there were a few rows that they set up for the representatives of the Jewish community, right? The Orthodox and Conservative would not come, but the Reform, Sephardi, did come. Just saying. And, you know, I'm not a Kaddish Baruch Hu, you're not a Kaddish Baruch Hu. when he gets up there, when he got up there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu worked it out what it is, right? It's not our job here to judge people. But, you know, but he does remain a case of a very public case of what could happen in these cases.
I was just going to say that if you do it privately, there's consequence on a lower level. But if you publicly denounce, the consequences are great.
Correct. Correct. I mean, to say that it's difficult is an understatement.
Is there any other period of time where people try this?
What do you mean?
Out of fear of...
During various pogroms, perhaps
the
persecution in Spain, etc.
Persecution in Spain is a pretty excellent example of it, right? And the persecution of Spain was, you know, that's where the Muranos came from. Right? Very similar case.
Murano means pig, and it was applied by the ones who left.
Right, so converse. So you want to call them conversos? Is that that?
I'm just saying. That's
I understand
the origin of the term.
Yeah. I understand.
Is the term called Lesha Bai Shar Dignai?